The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome in, everybody, to the joyride that we gather for weekly that we affectionately call Kiefer and Curry. I'm Kip Kiefer. Tony Curry is standing by. Glad to be with you. Hopefully you had a great start to your month of May. Almost summer, Tony. It's kind of hard to believe, but I think we've got another really good topic today.
No, I think we do too. And I love the topics. We go back and forth every single week. And by the way, don't forget to listen to Need to Know right here on the TKR app, as well as our Tony Curry Radio podcast platform. Search Tony Curry Radio Podcast. We're available on every major indice out there, Spotify, iTunes, whatever. You can hear both shows. But I love what you're going this week. Where are you going?
Well, you kind of started this last week. I thought it was a logical follow-up. Last week, if you missed the show, go back and catch it in the archives on TKR. It was the greatest chokes of all time.
Yeah.
And we came up with some really good ones, I think. I thought this week we would kind of get a little more on the positive side, but just a little bit more, and talk about the greatest one-hit wonders of all time in all varieties of life and you know, that can also be characterized as flashes as in the pan, the 15 minutes of fame that was the only 15 minutes for a lot of people or entities. And I thought that was a really good follow-up, Tony, for the choke show we did last week, is who did have that success, but the spotlight only shined on them for a brief time. So history kind of regards them as, yes, a success, but also a fluke. And I will throw you that softball to lead it off, and you get us rolling.
Well, you know, you look up one hit wonders and you're going to see music. And so I got to start there. I have to come with a one hit wonder. And if you're into radio at all, and you've been around for a quiet period of time, you ask anybody about a one hit wonder, they normally say this song, at least I think they do. And I went through the Ahas and the Dexy Midnight Riders and the Kaja Goo Goo's Too Shy and the Soft Cells and the Knack, My Sharona's, the 96 Tears, the Norman Green Bombs, the Afternoon Delights. And I came up with one, and I wanted to do a little research. And I knew a lot about this particular song, but everyone's going to go, ah, that's it. Originally, the B-side of Don't Let It Feel You, or Don't It Make You Feel Good. That was the actual, that should just tell you how much of a one hit this wanted. This was the B-side of that single that never even made the top 40.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it's just, it's a fantastic song. It was number one in the DC area before it actually sold one record. A disc jockey was given a copy of the record by a local promoter and said, here, play this song. It became a number one song on that particular radio station, the number one soft rock station in 1972. And it wasn't even in the top 300 albums of 1972, yet it had a number one song for 6 weeks. It was so big that Barry Manilow changed the title to one of his biggest songs because his song came after this one. It was so big that Paul Stanley said that Kiss's Hard Luck Woman was written because of this song. It lost Best New Band Grammy of the Year to Bette Midler in 1973. This song was so big, Kip, that when the song came out with this name in the title, the name in this country was 372nd in 1972. By 1974, it was a top 10 name for baby girls in this country. It was Brandy from Looking Glass. Whenever you say, give me a one-hit wonder, people go, Brandy, Looking Glass. And a lot of people wonder what happened to that band. They actually tried to get together. One of their original writers and songwriters died of AIDS in 2003, but they actually got the band back together in 2005 for a short period of time. The problem with this is something that you and I realize. Now, I used to go to a place called Swollen's. It was like a JCPenney's in Cincinnati, Ohio, because they had the best selection of albums, right? And so back in those days, we would hear a song and go, okay, that's a song. I need to hear one more hit song and I'll go buy that album, because the singles were 99 cents and the album was $7.99. Okay. Now they're $37.99. Yeah. So I wasn't going to spend $8 for one song. Now, if I bought an album, I thought there's no way this song is so good. There's no way there's everything else on the album sucks. There's no way. And then you'd buy the album. And if that turned out to be the situation, you would accidentally scratch the album and you would take it back to Swollen's and they would let you take that money and buy another album. Of course, they kind of realized that after you did it six or seven times, like I did. But the problem was there was 8 songs off the Looking Glass album. By the way, they did have a second album that didn't chart at all in the top 500. But the problem was, if you listen to that song, it was such a great pop song, and it's still played on the radio. I heard it yesterday.
Oh, absolutely.
I heard it on Sirius XM yesterday, and it's still a great song. It tells a story. It's a wonderful song. And so you hear that song, and you're thinking, how in the world? But the band wasn't about that pop single. I don't even know how they wrote that song, because if you listen to the other 7 songs, they are not even close to what that song sounds like. So people went out there and thought, okay, you know, it's a good band. And Looking Glass opened up for a lot of great artists in the 70s. REO, Speedwagon, they opened up. They opened up for Barry Manilow, who changed Mandy, or Brandy, to Mandy, which was one of his biggest songs. And people would sit there, and they, and obviously they played their hit song last, and they'd listen to this first 7 songs. They're like, what the hell's going on? And that's why that band was a one-hit wonder. And they never wrote anything like it. They stuck to their guns. This is what we sound like. And 2 years after that song came out, the band disbanded. But that's my big one right there, my one-hit wonder, because everyone thinks of Brandy's Looking Glass song whenever they think about one-hit wonders.
Yeah, I mean, great example of what still is a very enjoyable song for me to
great,
hear.
Great song.
It's a song I know all the lyrics to this day. That's an amazing one hit wonder for sure. If folks don't remember the song, it's, you know, basically the chorus is, Brandy, you're a fine girl. What a good wife you would be.
It's great.
But alas, the love of my lady is the sea. So anyway, great, great, great song. I will counter with my favorite, which is a little more recent, which I find absolutely hilarious. I don't know a lot about it, and you know so much about music. You are welcome to fill in any blanks that I leave. But the phenomenon in the early 2000s of the song by a Junkaroo band from the Bahamas, who no one had ever heard of. I think they played gigs, you know, like at the Holiday Inn or something, poolside. All of a sudden, this song is being played worldwide, and it's still played all over the place. And I don't have to really tell you much about the content of the song, because the name is the only lyrics. Are you ready for my song?
Yeah.
Who let the dogs out? Woof, woof, woof. Tony, how does Who Let the Dogs Out by the Baha Men become a worldwide sensation?
That is so true. And I'm surprised you never played it at the Birmingham Racecourse Casino when you were running dogs out there. You probably
used to crank it out. I was the manager of the Wichita track up in Kansas, that was a regular part of the day. But you know, it's just so amazing that a band like that, that's not even really formed for commercial, all bands are hoping for a big commercial score. But, you know, I really, when I thought of that and I said, that's gotta be one of the great one hit wonders of all time. You know, how does all that come together? You know more about music. How does somebody who comes up with such a simple, basic concept become a worldwide sensation and make enough money for the rest of their lives? Because this was not a band that anybody had ever heard of, and how could they even get noticed?
No, I think, you know, a lot of times when you see, and I'll use the Champs Tequila, whenever you see a song that's somewhat of the Macarena, whenever you see a band that comes out with somewhat of a novelty song, and it just hits at the right time. It's just a huge song. Whoomp, there it is. I mean, it's just one of those novelty songs that hits, and then you kind of wait, and it really doesn't bring. It's kind of like any type of coach. It's difficult to win a championship. Don't get me wrong, but when you win a second championship, people go, okay, this guy must be for real, right? You know, I'm watching Eric Spoelstra last night against the Knicks. And of course, everyone thought that he was only a good coach because they had LeBron James for a period of time. He's a great coach. He's won multiple championships. So, I mean, you look at things like that. But yeah, I think from a novelty standpoint, that certainly adds a lot of credence to why it's a one-hit wonder.
So I keep waiting for the follow-up hit by the Baha Men, but I think I'm going to be waiting a long time.
I think you will be. I'm gonna go entertainment for my second one hit wonder, and it's very topical, and I don't know if you get on Twitter trending, but the clip came out late last night. It has garnered over 5 million views, and it is from a guy who got his start back in 1977. It's a video of Mark Hamill, who is sitting in this stretch limousine, and fans are all over him trying to break his glass, get him to sign autographs. And he says, "This is not how you treat a hero." A guy who got his start in General Hospital, who was 8 and enough, didn't get a role there. He didn't get a role in the Partridge Family. Then in 1977, they're making this Star Wars movie. And please, send your emails to info@tonycurryradio.net. I love Mark Hamill, but he is my one-hit wonder. At the age of 26, he gets the role of a lifetime in Luke Skywalker, and no one thought this movie was going to be worth dirt. It just wasn't. No one thought it was actually going to be anything that it turned out to be. He didn't get his star on the Walk of Hall of Fame for 40 years. He got his star in 2017. How is that possible? Mark Hamill, of course, he won a Daytime Emmy at one point, I guess about 6 or 7 years ago. It was on the front cover of Tiger Beat when he was 27 years old, which is kind of weird. He was inducted as a Disney legend, and he, of course, was in the first 3 Star Wars movies. And I was talking to my kids. We just had May the 4th Be With You this past weekend, and I'm like, what happened to Mark Hamill? This franchise has made $52.8 billion. Mark Hamill is riding that tail all the way through his entire life, but he has been a one-hit wonder. He's been on like Texas Walker Ranger. He's been on Rockford Files. He's had these cameos in Fantasy Island. He shows up on Hollywood Squares. But the guy has never been as big as his Luke Skywalker role in 1977. And listen, I wish that we could all get one role if the Kiefer and Curry show turns into be the Luke Skywalker of podcast, and we can come out with 100 episodes and lay low for 40 years and make money off that. So be it. That's a wonderful thing. But Mark Hamill to me is a one hit wonder. I know Mark Hamill fans will say you are crazy, but I haven't seen Mark Hamill on the TV unless I'm watching one of the first 3 Star Wars movies. And I did this past weekend. So he's my second one.
That's a great one. I saw him do a cameo on the popular show about 10 years ago, The Big Bang Theory, where he plays himself. The character Howard finds his dog, and he's trying to give Howard a reward. And Sheldon character is getting married the next day. So, and of course, they're all Star Wars geeks. But Mark Hamill performs the ceremony. And it's really a funny bit because the wedding gets delayed and everybody's asking him Star Wars questions and he doesn't have the answers to any of them.
No.
And the character Stewart's answering all the questions. So anyway, really funny, but that's a great one. I'm gonna go to sports, which probably is not a big surprise for a lot of people, but you know, being in this part of the country, we are officially in Braves country, Tony. Mm-hmm. This is Atlanta Braves territory. Oh, when the Braves moved to the Southeast in 1966, they were the first professional sports franchise south of the Mason-Dixon line, and it was a big deal, and. Well, if you don't count Texas, and I don't consider Texas really the South, that's more the Southwest. But the Braves were the Southeast's first team ever, and really caught the whole region by storm. Had some good teams coming from Milwaukee, but then went through that ridiculously long, terrible drought of the 70s and even into the 80s, where they were just basically the worst team on earth. Ted Turner bought them. I want to illustrate my point by the fact that you remember Ted Turner owned the little rickety cable station, or not cable station, UHF station, WTBS Channel 17 in Atlanta. So the first year that free agents were able to be signed, because baseball prevented that forever, you had to stay with the team that basically owned you, when the courts overruled their ability to do that, the Braves signed a pitcher named Andy Messersmith from the Dodgers, who was one of the top pitchers in the game at the time. And Ted Turner convinced him that he would be number 17, of course, to match the station, because all the Braves games went on basically national television with the first super station, which was marketed as cable TV, kind of stormed on the scene. But Andy Messersmith, a lot of people might not remember this, but it didn't say Messersmith on his jersey. Where the name goes, he's number 17, remember, it said Channel 17. So for an entire game, while Messersmith pitched, you could see Channel 17 on his back. I mean, it was one of the greatest things. And of course, Bowie Kuhn, the commissioner, put a stop to that after just a couple of games. Right. But the Braves were just such a joke. They were terrible. And in the early 90s, the baby Braves, the acquisition of Greg Maddux, the development of Tom Glavine and John Smoltz, in 1992, in Game 7 of the National League Championship Series against the heavily favored Pittsburgh Pirates, featuring the young phenom Barry Bonds in left field, the Braves were down 2 runs going to the bottom of the ninth, had done nothing, looked like they were their bid to get to the World Series was going to be dashed. They started a rally. The former Pirates, Sid Bream, got a big hit to put the Braves within 1 run. They had runners at second and third. Bream was the runner at second. 2 outs. The pitcher spot came up. No designated hitter then. A batter by the name, Tony, of Francisco Cabrera.
I remember
the
it, man.
The third catcher who was activated for the playoffs because they let you expand the roster slightly, who had hardly ever batted in the major leagues, came to the plate with 2 outs in the bottom of the ninth and ripped a single to left field. Bonds, playing shallow, fielded the ball. Sid Bream, who was slower than molasses, rounded third, headed for home. The whole country and all the people at old Atlanta Fulton County Stadium held their breath. Bonds, with a throw basically from deep shortstop, Sid Bream slid in. Skip Carey went berserk on the Braves broadcast. Braves win! Braves win! Braves win! And the Braves go to the World Series in 1992 on the hit. Everybody remembers Sid Bream scoring, but I don't think a lot of folks remember Francisco Cabrera, whose entire career lasted only 5 years in the majors. He was a career 254 hitter. He did have 17 home runs in 5 years and I think something like 40 RBIs. But this is the guy who had the biggest hit that really turned that franchise into the juggernaut that it still is today. They had a brief re-kick in the teens here before this latest run, but now again have won 5 division championships in a row and are one of the top teams in baseball. And Francisco Cabrera, one of sports' greatest one-hit, literally one-hit wonders, deserves a lot of credit for putting that team on the map.
One of the greatest baseball calls of all time. I played it so many times on my show, and I was on a classic rock station. It was just a great call. I remember watching that from, I think I was at some Wings place up in Wildwood, and I remember watching that, and I remember Sid Bream crossing his leg and sliding across and touching the flag. And yeah, that was the one thing that Bonds was not good at. He did not have a good arm in that particular case, but two of the slowest guys in Major League Baseball hooking up and making that play happen. That was unbelievable. That was fantastic.
Yep.
All right. So the playoffs are going on right now in the NBA. And I watched last night the Knicks, and of course they came up lame again against the Heat. They're playing out of their brains. They're playing fantastic. We mentioned Eric Spoelstra and just what a great coach he is. So I'm going to take it back to 2012, about 11 years ago. The Knicks were 2-11 their last 13 games, and they weren't going to make the playoffs. Mark D'Antonio, of course, was the coach. Carmelo Anthony was banged up. He wasn't playing. And so they're playing the New Jersey Nets on February 4th of 2012. And in comes a guy who had played 55 minutes all year, all year. He was a Harvard graduate. He was undrafted in the NBA. He somehow got a scouting position on the New York Knicks and came in about 6 games before. And they put him in the game and said, let's give him a shot. He ends up going for 28 points. He plays 35 minutes in that game. And the Linsanity started. The Linsanity started. I remember being on the radio talking about Jeremy Lin ad nauseum for about 2 weeks. They went on an unbelievable 7-game winning streak. They eked into the playoffs. They did not win the playoff series. But he went crazy, including a 38-point outburst against the Lakers in that 7-game streak. He had 2 triple-doubles. The guy was on fire. And, of course, he was also the first American of Chinese or Taiwanese descent to join the NBA. So he was – this may be the fastest flash in the pan in all of sports history, period. It was a 7-game stint, and everyone's talking about Jeremy Lin. They realized that he didn't even have enough money to have his own apartment. He was living in a guy's basement. He was sleeping in a bunk bed. He was traveling to Madison Square Garden every single night from a bunk bed. Everyone talked about, who is this guy? And Lin's sanity took this world over. And unfortunately, at the end of the season, Mark D'Antonio, he resigned. Then Carmelo Anthony got back in the lineup, and Linsanity was over. As quick as it started, it was over. The guy averaged 28.6 points per ball game in 7 games. He had 2 triple-doubles. The guy was unbelievable. And then all of a sudden, he just went bye-bye. He went and got traded to Houston. He went to the Lakers. He went to the Hornets. He went to the Nets. He went to the Hawks. The Raptors won the championship just several years ago. He wasn't even on the basketball team, despite the fact that he got the ring because they won. Right now, he's playing for a team called the PLG Steelers. He can't even get back in the NBA. No one wants to have him. Now, you could sit there and say, well, a one-hit wonder. He was offered $35 million to sign with the Golden State Warriors. The Houston Rockets matched that deal, so he got that deal, but it was backloaded, so he didn't even get his bonus money on that. And he came out. There was actually a Linsanity documentary that came out, I think, in 2016 that documented his entire ride. But, I mean, we talked about, oh, my gosh, this guy is going to be the second coming. He's going to be unbelievable in the league. And he had that 7-game stint where he was unbelievable. He got the Knicks to the playoffs. They fell apart. D'Antonio's gone. Carmelo comes back. And all of a sudden, people are like, what happened to Linsanity? What happened to this guy? He will say it's because of his heritage, because of his culture. A lot of people would say because of his lack of English, that a lot of teammates didn't understand him and that he wasn't a great locker room guy. And thus, he went to 7 different teams and now plays for the PLG Steelers, and he has not played a minute this year. I don't know why. But you talk about a guy that was as hot as anything I've seen in the NBA for such a short period of time. He definitely was a one-hit wonder.
A great one-hit wonder. Because I remember that playoff run. The statistics you just quoted are astounding. I didn't even grasp.
The guy played 55 minutes all year.
It's unbelievable.
And then he comes in and he's playing 37, 38 minutes a night for 7 games, and they're going to the playoffs. And I mean, and the Linsanity was on. It was crazy.
Well, last night the Lakers game was late, and Lonnie Walker, who's a guy nobody's ever heard of.
Unbelievable.
He's been riding the bench all year for the Lakers. He comes in the fourth quarter and nails 15 points and carries them over the defending champion Golden State Warriors. So maybe another possible – maybe Lonnie Walker will turn out to be a superstar, but keep your eye out there, one-hit wonder fans.
There you go.
I'm going to go to politics here, which is, as people that listen to my show here on Tony Curry Radio know, is a big passion of mine. And I'm going to take us back to the bicentennial year, Tony, of 1976. And in 76, following the 72 election, where Richard Nixon was reelected president of the United States, but that didn't last very long because the proverbial you-know-what hit the fan when the Watergate burglary was traced back to the White House and Richard Nixon, and the cover-up was revealed, and Richard Nixon, I'm not a crook. Richard Nixon resigned from the presidency of the United States, and Gerald R. Ford had moved into that spot. Ford was a well-known senator from Michigan, kind of a solid Washington guy. As a young senator, he had been on the Warren Commission investigating the Kennedy assassination. But Gerald R. Ford was not exactly an inspiring leader, and there was a lot of resentment. I think what cost him the regular election in 76 was the pardoning of Richard Nixon, because a lot of people wanted him prosecuted and even jailed, and Ford took that off the table, and a lot of people were mad about it. So the unknown James Earl Carter from the great state, our neighboring state of Georgia here in Alabama, Jimmy Carter, governor of Georgia from Plains, a peanut farmer by trade, all of a sudden, he's cast on the stage, sweeps to an unlikely win in the Democrat primary over prominent contenders such as Hubert Humphrey and Ted Kennedy. Jimmy Carter is the nominee. I guess Americans were at the point where they just wanted something different than business as usual. And unbelievably, this governor from Georgia who really didn't have any qualifications on a national level. Very intelligent man, was actually a nuclear engineer by trade. A lot of people don't realize that, although, again, his family operated a peanut farm. That's what you do if you live in Plains, Georgia. But Jimmy Carter occupies the White House and brings a variety of yokels from Georgia to try and run our country. And they were basically chewed up and spit out in Washington, weren't taken seriously, just foiled at every turn. The country experienced a terrible run of inflation and overpriced items and gas shortages and the Iranian hostage crisis. And Jimmy Carter actually ran for re-election on that stellar record. And Ronald Reagan just stomped him into the ground in 1980, one of the biggest landslide elections of all time. And the Carters, including his wife, Rosalynn, said, right at the time, how shocked they were that the American people didn't understand all the great things that Jimmy Carter had done in the White House, because basically, as a historian, I can tell you that list was not very long. So Jimmy Carter, and the reason that I consider him an ultimate one-hit wonder of winning that election and being the president of the United States, he was out of office in 1980, Tony. Do the math. That was 43 years ago. He's been retired. He's recently entered a hospice care thing, so he's kind of on his last watch, but he's well into his 90s. And he has been in the news a little bit because he's big a Habitat for Humanity guy, has built houses, has done things for others. But basically, 1980 was the end of the line for Jimmy Carter, who I think will go down in political history as one of the great one-hit wonders politically of all time.
I think that's a great point. And I will say this. I was not obviously a Jimmy Carter fan. He was, I think a lot of people would say he's the worst president we ever had, but I would say he's the best worst president only because he has done so much since he served as president of the United States. I mean, just from a peace standpoint, Nobel Peace Prizes. Did you realize he's won 3 Grammys? He's won 3 Grammy. He's been
nominated, no idea.
He's been nominated 9 times for a Grammy. He's won 3 Grammys for best spoken word on an album. But he has done so much, and amazingly enough, and I hope he makes it, but later on this October, he will turn 99 years old, which is really stinking amazing.
Wow.
But he's done so much. He's one of those guys where, and quite frankly, God works in mysterious ways. Had he not been president of the United States, I don't know if he would have been there for Israel and Egypt to be part of that peace process. He did do a lot of good things. Unfortunately, it wasn't really good for our country, so that's good. My last one-hit wonder, and I had about 6 or 7 other honorable mentions. I'm not going to mention those, but I was going by it. I'm a Major League Baseball fan. I love baseball. My Cincinnati Reds suck, but I still follow them. It's unbelievable. But this franchise this year is celebrating its 30th year of existence, and that being the Florida Marlins, now the Miami Marlins. They started back in 1993. And so this is really a two-hit wonder because they have won 2 World Series, but I went back to their last World Series in 2003. And tell me if you remember these guys: Ivan Rodriguez, Luis Castillo, Mike Lowell, Juan Encarnacion, Miguel Cabrera, Jeff Conine, Dontrell Willis, AJ Burnett, Josh Burkett, Brad Penny, Carl Pavano. This team was absolutely loaded. I mean, from top to bottom. Back in 2003, they go 91-71. They have averaged the last 20 years, and that's their last one-hit wonder. The last 20 years, which is a pretty good piece of real estate. How are we doing here? 20 years of existence. They have averaged a record of 71-91 their last 20 years. On average, they finished 19 games behind first place every single year. They finished above 500 only 4 times in the last 20 years. They have only made the playoffs once since then. And here's the amazing thing. They've been around for 30 years. They haven't won their division once. Not even one time. In 30 years, they have not won their division one time. The 2 times that they went to the World Series and they won 4-3 and 4-2, they actually came in second. But the last time they did anything was in 2003. If you're a Miami Marlins fan, change it back to Florida and be done with it. I went back and just looked. I looked at they're 17-19 this year, which is really good for the Miami Marlins. But I went back and looked. I'm a baseball guy. I mean, I used to read the newspapers. I used to know the lineups. I used to have baseball cards. I could tell you from start to finish who was playing for the Dodgers. I could give you a player from every Major League Baseball team with exception of the Miami Marlins. I don't know one guy playing on their roster. I don't know a pitcher. They don't trade for anyone. I think I read something where their payroll is lower than some of the teams that are still playing players that aren't even on their baseball teams anymore. I mean, they're right there with the Oakland Athletics at like $30 million a year. They don't care. They've only averaged over 2 million fans one time in their total existence. I know there's a lot to go on down in Florida. I know there's a lot. But you know what? There's a lot to do out in L.A. too, and the Dodgers are doing pretty well, thank you very much. But I'm going to go my one-hit wonder, the Miami Marlins, who haven't even sniffed a first place in 20 years.
That's a pretty good one. I just watched a series with the Braves down there last week, and it's the Braves have a brand new play-by-play guy. We're talking about Skip Carey before. His son Chip has been the play-by-play guy for years. He's left and gone to the Cardinals. They got a new guy named Brandon Gaughan. That was his first visit ever to Marlins Stadium. And in the second inning of the first night of the series, he said, "This is a strange place to be because it's the quietest stadium I've ever been in."
You could talk and people will hear your conversation.
That's what he says. If you're a player, you better be careful what you say on the field because everybody in the stands can hear you. So that's another great one. My final one, Tony, is back from right around the late 80s. I should have looked up the year, but Mike Tyson was on top of the world. Mike Tyson was a fearsome, I mean, phenomenon. Was a guy knocking everybody out. He had a big fight with Michael Spinks that was Leon's brother that was very highly promoted. It lasted 17 seconds. When Tyson fought, he just basically charged. He's more of like an MMA fighter in this time. He wasn't allowed to kick, of course. Of course, he would use his teeth sometimes, just ask Evander Holyfield. But Tyson was a phenomenon and had gotten to the point where everybody just assumed this guy is just otherworldly. He is not going to lose. Then a strange thing happened. His mentor and the guy who basically raised him from childhood, Cus D'Amato, an old-time boxing trainer, old hard-ass, old-school kind of guy, Cus D'Amato passed away. And just like we talked about Tiger Woods, we did a whole show on him before. When Tiger Woods' dad was deceased, yeah, Tiger went on his kind of wild streak. Well, Tyson did the same thing. And I think when you lose that major parental, particularly father figure in your life, this is what happens a lot of times. And Tyson had been a little shaky for the first time. I don't remember who he fought, but the fight before the great one-hit wonder I'm going to mention, he showed a little bit of vulnerability, but people just shrugged that off. But in Tokyo, I think it was 1989, he met a guy by the name of James Buster Douglas. Mm. And in that fight, Buster Douglas, who was bigger than Tyson, who did not have a very distinguished record, everybody just figured he'd be another tomato can that would be on his back in just a matter of moments. He survived Tyson's early fusillade of blows, and the fight lingered on into the seventh or eighth round. And all of a sudden, Buster Douglas started doing damage because Mike Tyson was literally exhausted. Yep. The gladiator, the guy who, and I was lucky enough to go to a Tyson fight live at the Atlantic City Convention Center and see him fight Tyrell Biggs and knock him out, the Olympic silver medalist for the U.S., previous couple of years. But basically the bottom line in Tokyo was the world was absolutely shocked when Buster Douglas landed a couple of blows. Tyson was staggered, and then he came with a haymaker and knocked Mike Tyson out, and everybody was just aghast. It was the greatest upset maybe in sports history at that time. People could not believe that Tyson, who was who knows what how big a favorite, was knocked out. And Buster Douglas was immediately celebrated and hustled into some other fights with some of the big name guys, and he couldn't beat anybody else. He never he may have won another fight or two, but Buster Douglas's career basically just flamed out after that one spectacular night in Japan. And I think he is an absolute perfect example of, once again, that word hit comes into play. a one-hit wonder, although he had several big hits on Mike Tyson and Shock the World, but that was his moment in the sun. That was his flash in the pan. One hit wonder defined.
That is excellent. I remember watching that fight. I was at a hotel. Herb Winch's, the infamous one, used to call himself the franchise. No hit wonders about Herb Winch's. He's had plenty of hits in his life. But he was doing a private party. It was $500 a head to get in. He let me in because I was a good friend of his, and he sold these things called ringside seats where you could sit in front of a big screen TV and watch that fight. And by the way, do you want to take a stab at what the odds were on that fight?
It had to be ridiculous.
It was 42-1.
Yeah.
You don't see odds like that now. You just don't see them. They won't allow you to take a favorite that big, which means you'd have to put $100 down to win 4,200. It doesn't happen. 42-1. And I remember sitting there watching that fight, and we were all having drinks and stuff. And I mean, we're third and fourth round into it. We're like, when's Tyson going to come off the mat and get this thing done? I mean, because everyone thought that fight would be over in the first round. I mean, that's how much of a favorite he was. It was going to take one blow and Buster Douglas. And I don't even know why he fought Buster Douglas. I really don't. I mean, it ended up being just a gemstone for Buster in his career because it catapulted him. I don't know if he's still living off those winnings or not. But I remember watching that and you thought to yourself, like a lot of teams that shouldn't be in football games, if they can make it to the fourth quarter, man, look out, because that's when weird things happen. And next thing you know, he threw a haymaker. And Tyson, man, from the start though, from the first bell, it looked like he was hungover. I don't know this for sure, but I want to say that he went out the night before weigh-in, because he just thought he was going to show up, give him a couple punches, and he was going to down. And a lot of people, Kip, I remember saying this too, a lot of people thought Buster was going to lay down. He didn't want to get hit. He was just showing up to get his payday, and he was going to be done. This was a wink. I think they actually winked at each other when they met in the middle of the center ring before they took the first bell. Like, okay, I'm going to hit you hard. You're going to go down, and we're both going to go home. You get your payday, and I'll be done. And Buster showed. And the eighth round, man, when he laid him down, I could not believe it. I don't know anyone that had that ticket, but I'm sure some people out there did. But great one-hit wonders, man. Fantastic. I love it. That's a perfect one, and that's perfect for a one-hit wonder, my man.
Yes, indeed. You hit it on the head that every Tyson fight, your expectation was don't get comfortable because you're not going to be here very long.
Yeah.
And I'm still shocked to this day. I didn't get to see the fight. I was actually working in my job as the track announcer up in Southland, but we were able to get some kind of grainy round by round thing on some distant radio station and followed the fight. And everybody was just, no way. Is this real? So pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, and I remember a lot of people talking about, you know, when Tyson got out of prison, they were afraid he was going to kill somebody.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're in prison for a period of time. What do you think you're going to do when you get out of prison? He's going to want to kill somebody. So great stuff. That is our Kiefer and Curry Show. We do it every single week. I'll come up with something we can get into next week. Make sure you download that TKR app like the 100,000 folks have already done that. We greatly appreciate that. Keep downloading. You can hear this show at least 5 days a week, every single week on the TKR app. And, of course, Tony Curry Radio Podcast. Look up our platform. We're on Audio Boom. We're on iTunes. We're on Spotify. We're on every major indice. Search Kiefer and Curry. There's only one Kiefer and Curry Show. Check it out. You can check out all of our previous episodes. Kip, thank you so much. Till next week, man. Peace, brother.
All right, Tony.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.